Rock City Talk 105.9. Bloke Talk with Duncan Barks.
This is a man's world. But it would be nothing, nothing without a woman or a girl.
Hello, it is the weekend, it is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool, and this is Bloke Talk. It's kind of like, I like to consider it to being the jewel in the crown of the weekend lineup here at City Talk 105.9, and it's one of those very rare things when it comes to media and radio and newspapers and magazines and TV. It's something that actually does what it says on the tin. It's called Bloke Talk, and it's blokes talking about stuff, and that's what's going to happen for the next 60 minutes here at City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you're going to enjoy. The blokes in the studio. Well, my name's Duncan. I'm normally here during the week, 9 through until midday, weekdays here at City Talk 105.9. Here at the weekend, we do something a little bit different. And my fellow blokes this week, well, I have two blokes in the studio with me. To my far left, which will mean nothing to you, but everything to me, is a guy called Scott Hughes, who works on the pop music channel here at the City Radio Tower, which is called Radio City 96.7, playing all of that wiki-wah music, don't you?
That's right,
so
yeah.
So it's good to have you here. Thank you for that. And also to my immediate left is a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Roberts, and you might not know Jeremy too well, but you definitely know Gusto, which was his brand new restaurant that opened on Thursday. And we'll talk about that in more detail. Hello.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for joining us. Loads of stuff I want to talk about, essentially about you two. And what happens with Bloke Talk is invariably we go off of various tangents and cover all angles of life, the universe and everything. But the one common theme is it's certainly from a bloke perspective. So what we'll do is we'll kick off with Jeremy, if we may, because is it fair to call you a serial restaurateur?
Yeah, I've been described as that a number of occasions, yes. Yeah.
How did you get into setting up restaurants? Because I know, looking at all of your stuff, that your dad had a hotel and you started washing dishes, which is kind of almost a kind of typical way, isn't it, to get into that kind of business?
Yeah, it's like most clichés, it's very true.
Yeah.
I did actually start doing that, and he was a slave driver, my old man.
Was he?
Yeah.
Did he pay you?
He wasn't at all. No, he didn't pay me.
Shrewd man.
Indeed.
So you started washing the dishes. I mean, how did that lead? I mean, you went to university and stuff, but how did you first get into setting up restaurants?
That was after my hotel stint, really. Yeah. I mean, the hotels are difficult to get into in terms of your own business because they cost so much money to buy. So I met a bloke by the name of Tim Bacon, who's my business partner.
Yep.
And we essentially started a restaurant together. With a third partner back in 96.
All right, before we leap on to restaurants, I just want to dwell on the hotel side of stuff for a second because, I mean, you know, a lot of people's point of references for hotels is probably Forty Towers, let's be honest.
Yes.
Well, do you say that's true, Scott? I mean, what's your idea of running a hotel?
Yeah, no, I must admit, you do think, Basil Forty is...
All right, so is it anything like that? Do you get customers and clients you really want to hate? I mean, how does it work?
The politically correct answer is no, but the real one is yes.
Yeah, of course it is. Have you got? I mean, what's it like? Is it really a 24-hour day job? I'm guessing it is running a hotel.
Hotel is. Yeah. My dad used to love Forty Towers. He always said that was. He would love to be able to do that in so many, behave like Basil.
Yeah, I have this vision, this idea that hoteliers, if you like, their release, their stress buster is after, you know, it's all about 1 a.m, once everything is finished, they put on the videos of Forty Towers.
Yes!
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that was about it.
All right, well, we'll talk about the restaurants in a second because I'm fascinated about the world of restaurants because I seem to spend a lot of my time in there, hence my girth. Let's talk about Scott for a second because I know nothing about you. I pass you here in the corridors at the mighty City Radio Tower on a daily basis. I know you play lots of kind of like pop dance music, but you're not a Northwesterner, you're not a Scouser. What's your background?
Yeah, no, I was born in Essex.
Yeah.
And I then moved to Kent.
Yeah.
Then I moved to Birmingham.
Right.
Did 6 years in Birmingham. Then I was in Manchester for a little while. And then I moved to Liverpool. So now my accent, usually when I meet people out and about in Liverpool, they think I'm Australian. Because I've got I think I've been on the air 13 years and I think you kind of tone your accent down a little bit. And and I'm now saying words like chance and grass and brass the northern way.
Castle.
Yeah, exactly. So you mix that with the southern accent and it's kind of a strange accent.
How long has it taken you to get to that stage?
Well, I've lived out of, moved from Kent in, 1997?
Okay, so 11 years.
So 11 years.
11 years. So I've got 11 years to go before I start going down the grass, Bath and Castle.
What's funny, though, is I picked up the Liverpool accent really quickly, or I've picked up bits of it. And certain words and certain phrases. Whereas when I was in Birmingham, I didn't really pick anything up. And I was there for 6 years. I've been here for 4 years. It's strange how I just came here. And there's a lot of little kind of terminology and different ways of saying things in Liverpool that's very unique.
Because the three of us are now gone in common then is we're all actually Southerners in Liverpool, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Because you're a South Coast gent, aren't you?
Yeah, from Hastings.
Hastings, which South is, Coast, yeah, 1066 country. Yeah. What do you remember about Hastings?
Well, I was there till about, till I went to university, a fair bit. But
I've done some time in Hastings. Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm just trying to think. Scott, have you ever been to Hastings?
I don't think I have, no.
It's kind of like, well, the next equivalent down the road, if you like, is Eastbourne, which a lot of people call God's waiting room,
that's
don't they?
Right, yeah.
Hastings, I was going to say, is just a slightly... Well, Eastbourne is a little bit more gentle. Hastings, I was going to say, a little bit rougher?
A bit edgier, it? Yeah.
Edgier, grittier?
It certainly was very, very gritty.
Yeah.
But it's actually had a bit of renaissance in the last few years.
Yeah.
So it's actually improved quite a lot of money gone into it.
So the three of us already, we've established so far, literally 5 minutes in, that we all have South Coast roots, and we're now here in the great city of Liverpool. Essex is an interesting place, Scott, because did you grow up in a world of white stilettos and XR3s?
Do you know what's funny? I say this to everybody as well. Liverpool and Essex are so similar. They get a really bad reputation out of the city, but anybody that comes here absolutely loves it. And my family, when they come up, my dad loves it here. And he comes up for weekends and he's like, taxis are so cheap, and this is cheap, and that's great, and the women don't wear anything, and he just loves it when he comes up. He's just brilliant. Another night out, it's like she's only wearing hot pants. I'm like, it's great, isn't it, Dad?
Yeah. And it's November.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they're very similar. And when I go back to Essex, the two things I'm always surprised at when I go back is how much money there is in Essex.
Yeah.
I always forget, and you go there, it's all Porsches and Ferraris and Range Rovers. And I think a lot of the city boys live out in Essex. Mm. But it's kind of personality-wise, they're very similar cities. I think the north is a lot friendlier.
There'll be people listening to Bloke Talk at the moment who've never been to Essex, and I've got to be. I'm just thinking, I've been to Southend and I've done Gravesend. Gravesend, Kent or Essex?
Gravesend is Kent.
It is Kent. It's a borderline. Is it almost?
It's just through the tunnel.
Southend is Essex.
Yeah, that's very Essex.
Yeah, I've been there. Very long pier, longest in the whole country, isn't it? What would you say is the essence of Essex for people who are listening to this at the moment that I had to sum it up?
I guess it's that. It's what you said earlier, the white stilettos. That's what it's looked upon outside. Yeah. It's looked upon as kind of the cheap version of London.
Yeah.
But it's not when you go there. That's the funny thing. But it is. It's one of those places that's, you know, whenever you say to people where you're from, I always say Essex with a smile on my face because I know what's coming next.
And of course, you've got all the Essex jokes, haven't you?
Yep.
The Essex girl jokes. Do you know any Essex girl jokes?
None that I can repeat.
You must be a connoisseur. I know one there, so I'm just trying to see if I can remember it about cocking it up on the radio, which invariably is what happens when I tell jokes. What was it? What is an Essex girl's favourite wine?
Go on.
I want to go to Bluewater. Bluewater, for those who don't know, is a kind of shopping retail park. Is that a funny joke?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Bluewater
Essex
Kent,
girls.
Though.
Did you ever have a kind of, because this is Bloke Talk, we can talk about this. We're going off on one hell of a tangent, but that's the beauty of it. Essex girls are quite unique, apparently, aren't they?
Again, very similar to Liverpool.
You're going to have to be so careful when you make this comparison here.
No, I
You've
think,
got to
again,
go home tonight.
You see, you go back home, go back to Essex, and you look around, you don't see any white stilettos. It's a very big stereotype, but still there. And it's the same when you go to Liverpool. You know, everybody says, there's a stereotype about Liverpool girls, and you know, the one thing I will say is they dress up in Liverpool.
They really work hard, and
it's funny because you'll go out and the guys will wear a t-shirt and jeans and the girls are wearing like a big cocktail dress. It's like a Monday night.
And do you know what, you're absolutely bang on, because that is the same. It's exactly the same. It's in tandem, isn't it, with Essex, because you get exactly the same. And I notice this, I mean, I've talked about this a lot on the radio, particularly on the weekday show. You know, I've been in this city now since December, and the first thing I noticed is that the girls and the ladies make an effort in dressing up and makeup. And I didn't want that to be received as a sexist remark, but I talked about it on the radio and people were phoning up going, well, it's great that you've noticed that, thank you. Mm. And it's a very simple thing. The 86 bus I used to get in along Allerton Road, I'd get on there at like 10 to 7 in the morning. Now, if I was on that bus in London, you'd see all of these kind of these heaps, these wrecks stagger on, you know, sort of like looking like death warmed up. And yet you get on the 86 bus along the Allerton Road and you see these perfectly made up faces, which was amazing. And that was, you know, so early in the morning. And I think you're absolutely bang on. There is this parallel where it doesn't matter if it's Essex. Well, I can see it in Essex now, but in Liverpool, you know, it could be a Monday night, but people will make the effort to get ready. That's great. Why do you think that is, either of you? I mean, you must see it, Jeremy, in the restaurant business. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter when it is. You know, people will make the effort in this part of the world.
Yeah, when I came up here, which was 15, 16 years ago, that I noticed in London, it's almost the reverse. It's dressed down to go out. And I don't know. I think people like to have a good time. And you feel good if you're dressed up.
Yeah, I think that's the case. Scott, any take on that?
It just makes a nice change, doesn't it? When you go out and, like you say, everyone's made an effort, everyone's looking good and all that kind of stuff, and you think this is, you know, it's just a really pleasant thing. A lot of my friends, Birmingham was very well-dressed, remember that, but particularly in London, a lot of my friends will go out in jeans and trainers, and they'll just, you know, and then when they come up here, and I'm like, oh, I wouldn't wear trainers tonight. Really? And I'm like, you know, just in case.
But you see, I think that's good because people have stopped making the effort to go out and dress up. I was talking to someone else about this, and someone was saying, well, quite right too, because there shouldn't be any social barriers anymore. But I actually think, and there are certain things, I mean, you know, my wife used to work in the theatre, and as a result of that, I used to get lots of freebies to go along to the theatre. And you would dress up for the theatre. You know, certainly you'd put on a suit and maybe a shirt because it was the theatre. And I think also if you're going out for dinner, you kind of make a bit more of an effort than you would do if you were just going down the pub. But I think increasingly we're seeing people doing less of that, which I think is quite sad. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a function of the melding of the pub and the restaurant and the bar. It's all becoming one activity, really. Yeah. And I think people want to feel comfortable when they go down the pub. So that's almost an extension of that. Certainly our restaurants, if I can plug them for a moment.
Yeah, of course, go ahead.
We try and create that. Yeah. We call it the third place mentality, which is you know, you have your two places where you spend all your time, home and work.
Yeah.
And people need a third place to relax and spend the rest of their time.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the guy who coined the phrase, but he did a lot of research in Beirut when they were bombing the hell out of it.
Right.
And what he found was that no matter what happened to the work or the home, if it was bombed and so on, people would congregate on street corners and drink coffee, and they had that third place and somebody
set up
on the machine. And it happened time and time again.
You see, I'd never actually thought for one moment that amount of research or thought went into actually creating a restaurant environment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very... people always talk about the food and the drinks, but the ambience,
that sort of
intangible element is very important, and we work very hard at actually creating that and training our managers to create that, if you like.
So it's called the third place?
Yeah, the mentality is the third place. So what we're trying to say is that you come to that place and you feel comfortable as if you were at home or at work. And you spend time there and you're happy to spend time there.
That's fascinating.
And if you can create that, then, you know, hopefully you're on to a winner.
All right, so we talked about people's roots so far. I mean, I want to certainly talk to Jeremy, to you, in a lot more detail about your work with Tim, your partner in the restaurant trade and stuff. And also, Scott, I want to talk to you about, your meteoric rise through the world of radio. Because it's quite interesting. We've had some various people on here talk about how they got into kind of what they do for a living. Jeremy, let's focus on your work. I mean, obviously last Thursday, Gusto opened. It's going to be a great asset to the city. Let's talk about your work with Tim. I mean, how do you actually go about creating restaurants? You just talked about the kind of like the third place, which I think is fascinating. But how do you actually create, if you like, is it a restaurant brand?
Yeah, it's a brand. Yeah. That's what we've always done. Yeah. Over the years, we've created a number of brands together.
Yeah.
Probably the most well-known would be The Living Room,
yeah.
Which is one we successfully sold last year.
Yep.
Can
I just interrupt? Is that your intention? Because I used to work years ago before swallowing the, some would say, the bitter pill of commercial radio journalism and media and broadcasting all rolled into one. I used to work in public relations, and I used to have a client who was a guy called Hugh Corbett, who set up the Slug and Lettuce chain.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he classed himself as a serial pub entrepreneur. And what he would do it purely for the simple reason that he loved creating new brands.
Yeah.
He did the Slug and Lettuce thing, and then he went on to a thing called Tup Inns. That's TUP. I think a tup is a young sheep. It was Tup Inns, and he built it up, and all this thing would do, they're based around London, and they'd serve kind of like magnums of claret and roast lamb and roast potatoes on a Sunday. And if you wanted to go and watch the rugby somewhere, you went to a Tup Inn. And that was the kind of brand they did. It was all like Kingston and Islington and all around there and stuff. But they got to 12 or 13 outlets, and then he would sell it and then move on and want to create another brand. He did it for two reasons. One, he got bored and he liked creating brands. And two, he did it because, to be blunt, it was a very good way of making money. So what's your ethos? Do you get bored easily, or is it just kind of like gets to it? Well, I mean, in the nicest possible way.
No.
Do you get to a point where you think, I've done what I want to do with this, I want to move on and create something else?
Yeah, there's an element of that. I mean, I think in any career, you kind of find what you're good at.
Yeah.
And Tim and I, as a partnership, that's something that we found we're good at.
Yeah.
That we're good at creating brands,
growing
them to a certain level, instilling them with values that people can, that other companies can take on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to a certain point, and the size of a company changes. It changes its
makeup.
It's,
changes.
Its raison d'etre changes a little bit, and that's an area we found that we feel it's better for somebody else to take on from there.
Yeah. What's it like though? Because The Living Room has been a massive success. Is it kind of like handing over a baby to someone else? How do you feel when you sell your business on?
Well, it's I don't. I never dwell on it because I think I'm the sort of individual that is always looking for
the next
the future.
Thing. Right.
So I never look back, and you know, you make a decision. Be it where you're going to put an individual restaurant or selling a restaurant completely, you make that decision and you live with it and you move on like any decision you make in life. I think that there is always a little bit of something you leave behind. Yeah. I think, especially with the living room, because that was probably out of the brand we kept the longest.
Yeah.
And we started it from one in Manchester.
Sure.
And built it up to a £30 million company. So,
is there a temptation? And I can only go on my personal experience on this. And you know, Scott, leap in at any time. And I mean, maybe you can almost relate to this when you leave one radio station and go to another, and then you listen to your old station, you think, well, it's not that good now. So now I've gone. But I mean, I look when I've left places, and I kind of like, you know, might be in contact with a couple of people, and I say, what's it like now? And they say, oh, we've done this and we're doing this and this is our strategy. And you think, well, I wouldn't do that. Is it almost the same when you've moved on from the living room, so you sell it on? Is there not the temptation to kind of maybe just go and visit it a couple of months down the line, a particular venue, and go, oh, they've changed the menu.
What have
they done with this? Is there not that temptation?
No, as I said before, I think that's counterproductive. No. I think I always find it interesting to see what people do with it. Yeah. And it's a credit to us as a team of people that living room now is going on to more success, which is fantastic.
You've laid the foundations,
and that's good for us. You know, when people look back and see what we're doing now, they know that what we're doing is going to last, and that's the essence of a brand, really, that it can live through different management regimes and different times.
But the brand's strong enough that it will survive,
absolutely,
won't it?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll come back in a few moments. So I'm loads of more stuff. I want to talk about restaurants. I want to talk about Gusto as well, which opened on Thursday. And we haven't even scratched the surface when it comes to Scott, who I suspect started his broadcasting career maybe in his bedroom with a couple of Dansette turntables.
Not far off.
And a little microphone from Argos. We'll come back in a few moments' time. You're listening to Bloke Talk. It is the weekend. It's City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Bloke Talk with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
It is the weekend. Welcome back. It is Bloke Talk. It is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. I'm Duncan in the studio. Jeremy Roberts, also Scott Hughes as well. It's one of these things with broadcasting. I only wish that you could hear some of the things we talk about in the breaks, because you'd be quite fascinated, and we might get round to it a little bit later on. Where do we get to? Well, so far we discovered a little bit about Jeremy Roberts. A new restaurant is open in the Albert Dock on Thursday. It's called Gusto. We're slowly working out how the restaurant trade works and how you build restaurant brands. One of Jeremy's most successful recently being the Living Room. Also, Scott Hughes, who is a well, what do you want to be called? Are you a broadcaster? Are you a radio presenter?
Yeah, I use presenter.
Presenter, because disc jockey has a kind of slightly strange connotation, doesn't it? We don't know much about you. We know that you've kind of moved around the world a bit from Essex and Manchester, Birmingham, and you're now here. But how did you get into this radio stuff in the first place?
I was always going to be a pilot when I was younger. My dad's in airline insurance, and always wanted a pilot son. Used to take me to all the air shows and stuff, and I used to love flying. And back in those days, if you could get 5 GCSEs and 2 A-levels, you could pretty much apply to the airline and off you go.
That's all right.
I'm one of these people that I'm not thick, but I just can't concentrate. I can't focus on anything for any period of time. So I'm rubbish at taking exams and things like that.
Yeah.
So cut a long story short, didn't do very well at school.
Okay.
Didn't get the exams I needed to become a pilot. So I thought, right, I'll try something else.
Right.
Around about that same sort of time, I was, I guess, about 11-ish, something around there. This is when I was starting to do pretty bad at school.
Right.
And it's a really strange story, because a friend of mine got bullied for being overweight.
Okay.
And he became anorexic.
Right.
And he got down to the point, he was probably about 4 stone, severely anorexic, really skinny.
Yeah.
And it would take him an entire day's energy to drink a tiny little bit of water. It was that bad. And I went and saw him, and he said, oh, I was listening to the hospital radio last night, and it was real good fun. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, you get better, we'll go and do a show together.
Yeah.
And I thought, it was something that popped into my head. I thought, I'll say it. And so he got better, and I said, I've got to go and do that show now. I was like, oh, I'm dreading this. Went and did it. He hated it, and I loved it. So I stayed there, and that was when I was about 12, and then I got some work experience at my local radio station hounded them for ages.
Yeah.
And then when I was 15, I'd been there, I kind of went after school and at weekends and that kind of stuff. When I got to 15, I was filing records and making tea and stuff, and then all of a sudden I was there quite late at night, and the programme director rung up and he said, listen, the guy that does overnights is really ill and can't do the show. Who's in the building?
Okay.
And I said, well, me and someone else. And he said, he said, how old are you? And I was like, 15.
Who are you?
How old are you? I said, 15. He went, can I have your mum's number? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I gave my mum's number. He rang her and said, you're right for your son to stay out and do a show tonight? Yeah. She's like, oh, yes, no problem. Yeah. So basically he said, go on and go on the air and do it. Right, and I was 15. I think that's the second youngest or something like
that. What was
the
name of this radio station?
This was Essex FM.
Essex FM,
Essex Radio, as it was at the time. Yeah. So, and the programme director said, you know, keep it simple. Don't try and be too clever. Don't. And of course, I ignored it all, went on the air thinking I was the funniest thing alive and tried to be Mr. Personality. And it wasn't great. Listen, I've still got the tape now. Listening back is horrendous. So he basically took me off air the next day and said, never again. You ignored everything I said. You're never going to do a show again.
Oh, God.
So he kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
I think he got meningitis, you know, and he was off work for like 18 months.
Okay.
I was like, oh, dear. But as soon as he left, another boss came in, and the next day they put me back on air again, and I kind of got a second go. And then kind of started doing it professionally from 17. But I literally, because I've been doing it so young, they offered me a job when I left. I did a year at college. And I was supposed to do 3 years at college. I completed the first year, and then they offered me a job, and it was making all the jingles and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I said, yeah, great. And it was £6,000 a year. I remember that.
Wow.
It was my opening salary. And so I'd have been 17. Yeah, I'd have been 17 years old. And I said to the college, I want to leave and do this job. You're a waste of time. You've got to finish this course. You'll never amount to anything. Yeah. And I'm like, well, it's an opportunity. I'm going to take it. So I signed all the paperwork, got released from college. And about a year later, they were ringing me up asking me if I'd do a talk at the college.
Brilliant.
Because I'd done so well. Yeah. But then, and I was on air full time from 17. So 29 now, and I've been doing it pretty much 12, 13 years full time.
Okay. And you worked around the country doing this, as we discovered earlier. So you've done Manchester, you've done Birmingham
and Kent.
Kent, and you're here now.
Yeah, it's weird because, I was like 17 when I went to Kent, and I just kind of got in my car, drove to Kent in the car, did the show, didn't even think about it, rented a flat, drove it for a while, but it got a bit tedious driving, so I rented a flat, and same for Birmingham. I had a bin bag of clothes, that's all I owned. Yeah. Moved up to Birmingham, stayed in the hotel for a month, just did it. And when I think back now, I think, it's quite an intense thing to do on your own.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was like, great, brilliant, another bigger radio station, this is great. Yeah. And I kind of followed a boss around. The boss that took me on in Kent took me to Birmingham and then took me to Manchester, so I kind of followed him around, which was better because it was working with the same people, so it wasn't so bad moving away. But, and it all kind of just panned out from there. But as I say, it's weird how it all sort of falls into place.
Where have you felt, or where do you feel most rooted? Do you feel more rooted here? Let's be honest about this.
Definitely
I mean, I kind of, people have worked this out for themselves. And again, I mentioned it earlier, I talk about it a lot. But, you know, I come from the South Coast, and we all do, actually, on this particular show this weekend. But, I thought, Liverpool, how's that going to work out? I feel very rooted here in a very short space of time. And I can't put my finger on why.
And this is what I was saying to you earlier on, it gets such a bad reputation outside of Liverpool. Yeah. People are nervous to come here, which is crazy. And when you do come here, it's just brilliant. I would say I've been here 4.5 years, and I say within 6 months I was calling this home, and I was saying I'm driving back to Essex, and then I was coming home to Liverpool. In Birmingham, I was there 6 years, and it was always I'm going home to Essex and going back to Birmingham. Yeah. Never, but just I don't know why, just didn't feel right for me, and it didn't. You know, I had a few, you know, there was a few dodgy moments at work and a few bad relationships and that kind of stuff. But I don't think that was the reason why it just never felt like home. It's weird. But here, as I say, and like you were saying earlier on, I know so many people that have come to Liverpool from the south and they've just spent the rest of their life here. They've married a Scouse girl and just stayed the rest of their life.
You feel quite rooted here, Jeremy.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, I often say that it's a secret best kept.
It is, isn't it?
Because it's a great one. Southerners coming up here. They'll find out. But it's really good up here.
Yeah. And how does it work? I mean, let's just touch on the restaurant side of things for a bit. I mean, let's focus on the living room, because we touched on that earlier. Obviously, you've opened living rooms elsewhere. You opened one in Manchester. That was the first one, I think, saying.
Yeah.
How does operating somewhere, I mean, do you notice there's a change in customer or a change in attitude? I mean, do you adapt your if you like, your outlets or your venues locally to suit people? I mean, how does it kind of, do you notice a change around the country when you open stuff?
Yeah,
the answer could be no, I don't know. Certainly we've talked about Scott working at different radio stations and feeling kind of different about different places.
Yeah. We work in a sort of demographic, if you like, and we have different target markets for different times of the day and so on. Yeah. So and they strangely don't change massively across the country. Yeah. But I think to answer your question in a slightly different way, Manchester, as an example, we have another brand called Black House, in particular is the Grill on the Alley in Manchester, and we're looking to bring that to Liverpool as well very shortly. Mm. What we find there is that's sort of an evolution of perhaps where we were with the living room a few years ago.
Yeah.
And in order to for a brand to develop, you have to evolve. It has to evolve. You have to allow it to evolve. And that's kind of the trick, really.
Yeah.
Because a brand can get stale if it doesn't change. And that's really what happened with SDSS, really.
Yeah.
Is that we felt that got a little bit stale and it needed an injection of life. And,
but that's
and
quite a rare thing, isn't it? Because because some people wouldn't be able to identify the fact that something's become stale and would carry on, wouldn't they? So yeah, it's quite rare that you can actually do that.
I think there's lots of examples of that. Yeah. When you see on the high street things that...
Yeah.
Often they do get reinvented and along the way, but sometimes they go right down before they come back up again.
Okay, something I want to ask both of you, again, before we do our bloke talk questionnaire towards the end of this hour, we'll focus on your latest venture, Gusto, which opened last Thursday. But I want you to kind of just describe to me, actually, more than anything else, because I'm very nosy, but also to people who are listening, your kind of typical days, because you both have very different kind of lines of work. I would say that Jeremy, and for God's sake, tell me if I'm wrong here, you know, because it's, if you like, it's your name above the door and your reputation, you know, you're prepared to put 24 hours in a day to make this work. Scott has to focus on his three hours a day when you're on air. But what are your typical days? Let's start with Scott. So kind of how does your day roll out?
An average Monday. I do some martial arts three times a week, so that will be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So I will get up. I generally get up no earlier than about 10 because I work later on in the afternoon.
Different world, isn't it, Jeremy?
Because I work late, everybody says this. Because I work later on in the afternoon, my kind of day moves on.
Yeah.
So I'll get up about 10-ish.
Yeah.
I'll go off and do my martial arts for an hour, kind of about midday, something like that.
Okay.
Then I'll come home, come into work for kind of 2-ish, grab some lunch, and then I'll go through the papers, go through the emails, do the stuff, get the show ready. If we've got any giveaways to do or anything like that, that I need to go through the logistics on how to do it and how we're going to do the competitions on air, that kind of stuff. Finish at 7, usually can go pretty much straight away because the good thing about a music show is it's you can do it all before you go on air.
Yeah.
So I can pretty much finish at 7, and then if I'm going out, I'll go out. Sometimes I do some gigs in the evening. And then
what kind of gigs do you do? Is that when you're spinning the wheels of steel?
Yeah, again, see,
you can tell I work on the talk.
I mean, I always say to people if I do a gig, I always say that obviously being a presenter, and I class myself as a presenter as opposed to a DJ or a disc jockey. So I always say if you've got a DJ on, keep that DJ on because what we're talking about brands, what kind of music that place likes, you know what brand you've got and what you want.
Yeah.
I'll come in and talk on the mic and maybe do some stage games or whatever they want.
Yeah.
But I will do that to kind of fit in with their brand. Every gig's different, depends on where you go. You go to some classier places, you go to, places like the Living Room wouldn't have a gig. It's not the type of, it's not the type of thing that they would have.
Sure.
Other places have it, some places are quite.
Do you find it easy to do? Because when I talk to people who work on the radio, and I'm one of these people, I love being in a big box like this, air conditioned, soundproof, with one of these microphones here. I love that. If you had to stick me in front of several thousand people, if you had to stick me in front of 70 people, actually, I'd go, oh my God, do I have to do this? I find it really hard. It's not. I mean, do you find it quite easy to do that?
There's two answers to that. I agree with you completely. Every DJ or presenter that I know is very shy as a person. A lot of people, because I'm very extrovert on the air, a lot of people when they first meet me think I'm arrogant because I'm very quiet, and they think he can't be quiet, he's so different on the air, and they think it's arrogance, but it's not, it's just shyness. And I have to kind of suss people out before I can kind of, suss their humour out and that kind of stuff. So again, when I'm doing gigs, it is weird. You look around and, we've done some schools tours and you get up on a stage and there's 50 kids in front of you and you're just thinking, this could go either way. I agree with you on that. But when you do the big gigs, I did the Knowsley Hall Music Festival last year on stage and I was bringing the Zootons and the Coral and people like that. There was 25, 30,000 people there. That's brilliant. That's a different feeling because you walk out, you can't hear anything.
No.
The hair on the back of your neck goes up and that's the closest as you'll get to being a rock star. And you're standing on this stage, you're looking around, there's drum kits behind you and you've got the Coral waiting to come on behind you and everybody there is looking at you and you can just say a few words and everybody's putty in your hands. So something like that's an amazing experience.
Because they want to have a good time, don't they, as well? So they've got
you
the
can't
vibe.
Mess that up, basically. Yeah. And all you can do is excite them and that's a lovely gig to do. And then you've got nightclub gigs that, again, very different again, you've got people in the club. That's, it's easier in that sort of environment. But I am very much like you as well, where, put me in a TV studio in front of a camera and it's a very different... The one thing, whenever I'm filming something, if they're filming a video for the radio station or whatever, the one thing I notice when I watch it back is how... when I'm talking, I'm doing it now, I'll look down like this and I'm not actually making that much eye contact because I'm connecting to someone in my head that's listening through the radio as opposed to talking to someone face to face. And because of that, people think, that you're arrogant or whatever because you're not making eye contact.
You have to
really concentrate on, and I move my hands about like this all the time. And whenever I'm on the radio, usually in the afternoon, I have to have a pen in my hand and there's these tiny little comforts where... I have to have things where I just feel better.
It's so true, actually. You made that point, because I used to do some kind of conference work, and when you do this thing, you all have your little earpieces and stuff, and I used to kind of link people together for conferences, and used to have a lectern there, and like the one thing was to come through, like, for God's sake, lift your head up and look out to the audience, because you'll always be down here, because that's what you do when we sit in these boxes and talk rubbish for 3 hours a day. Let's talk about your... What's a typical day in the life of Jeremy, then? Is there a typical day?
Yeah, I can tell that Scott hasn't got kids, that's for certain.
I know, he's got it easy, hasn't he? Getting out of bed
at 10.
All this, oh, I work a late day, getting out of bed at 10. You haven't got kids.
Enjoying it while I can.
Yeah, make most of it.
6:30 I start, and that's basically let the dogs out.
Yeah.
Sort the kids out. I do have a wife that helps out, of course. But I hope she's not listening.
Better get that in.
But yeah, it starts at 6:30, and then I'm in the office sort of for about 7:45, 8:00. I'm pretty office based actually, but I do get out into the business quite a lot. I look after the commercial and marketing side of the business, as well as some other stuff, and so I'm in the business a lot. And I'll typically get out to the restaurants, have a meal out in the restaurants once or twice a week.
Right.
The day sort of ends probably 7:30-ish most days.
Okay. And am I right in thinking, obviously there's you and your partner here, your business partner, but you look after the marketing, the operations side.
No, Tim's more operational.
More operations. The image and the marketing.
Yeah, the sales development.
So do you get involved at all in actually, when you were, if you're going to set up a new brand or open a new venture or start a new venture, would you both look at maybe venues? Would you both talk about creating the brand? And what about the menu? Is that more a Tim thing or is that a both thing?
Yeah, Tim probably more on the menu side. Yeah. But we're a partnership, so it tends to be we input on both sides. I mean, choosing sites is something that is really important. Finding the right site.
Absolutely.
Location is true in that. And that's something that you've got to be 100% certain about. And if one of us has any reservations, then we just don't do it.
No. And what about the regeneration of Liverpool at the moment?
It's just fantastic.
It is, isn't it?
It's just phenomenal. I mean, we've been involved in Liverpool for 10, 12 years now with different businesses, and the change in that time has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
And just recently, it's just fantastic.
Is there, on Bloke Talk, we talk to various people from various walks of life. We've had property developers on, we've had entrepreneurs, we've had bar managers on, et cetera, et cetera. Is it a fair question to say, will it reach saturation point in this city when it comes to restaurants or bars of a certain kind? Or do you think there's always going to be the demand, so you can always open up another venue?
I think there's two answers to that. The first one is that the market's forever growing.
Yeah.
I mean, we follow America in terms of the way that we do things.
Right.
And the eating out market in particular is something that's growing year on year and year on year. And I don't see that changing at all.
Okay.
I think that's just a cultural thing that's changed.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And that's going to carry on. So, people are getting the breakfast now. Yeah. That's the next thing.
Yeah. Is that your hot tip? Is this a Bloke Talk exclusive? if you want to start a little business, it's to open up some kind of breakfast venue somewhere?
Well, I think more that people are meeting for breakfast now, and that's beginning to happen.
Okay.
Certainly in London. I mean, I go down to London and I spend my day down there and I pack in as many meetings as possible.
Right.
I usually start it with a breakfast meeting
with
somewhere. And I think that's gradually going to come across the country. But I think to answer your question more fully, I think that the market's growing always, so there will always be room for one more, but it's got to be good.
Yeah.
And I think what will always happen is that there will be churn and change.
Yeah.
And as the industry in its entirety gets better, because I think it is gradually getting better. I mean, restaurants a few years ago were about 10, 15 years ago, the preserve of hotels and so on.
Yeah.
And we didn't have proper restaurants in the way we have them now. We did at the very top end, but we didn't have proper restaurants. And the standards in I'd like to think in our brands, in Gusto and in Black House, are such that people will enjoy the experience.
So always room for one more, but it's got to be good. And actually, it's got to be different as well.
It's got to have that. Yeah, kind of
something different
third place thing.
We'll come back in a few moments' time. Loads more stuff to talk about in the final chunk of Bloke Talk. It is Bloke Talk. It's a show about blokes talking about stuff, and it is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
This is a man's world.
Bloke Talk with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
But it would be nothing without a woman or a girl.
It is the weekend, but of course you know that. It is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. You probably know that as well. And this show is called Bloke Talk, 60 minutes of blokes talking about stuff, really, life, the universe and everything, with a very unique male slant. Jeremy Roberts is here, Scott Hughes is here, and I'm Duncan Barks. We were talking about your typical days. What we didn't touch on is how both of you unwind before we start moving on to other stuff. So we'll go with Scott. I mean, you do your martial arts. Do you unwind with that, or is that...
No, I don't unwind. I usually start the day with it, because I find when I've done it, the days when I do it, I'm a lot more energetic in the afternoons and stuff. It's weird, because when you're doing it, it just knackers you out, but afterwards you do feel great when you've had a shower.
So how do you unwind? How does...
I guess TV. It's a difficult question. This is another thing. I don't generally go to bed till 2, 3 in the morning, because I finish at 7, get home, put some telly on, and because usually when you've been on air, particularly a day, you know, if something exciting's happening, like last week we had the big Liverpool game, you know, in the week and stuff like that. When that's happened a few days, you know, you kind of, if the atmosphere's there and you go out afterwards and everyone's having a few beers and
the
stuff,
adrenaline's
kind of, exactly.
Isn't it?
So going home and kind of winding down is quite difficult to do. When you've done a gig, even more so. If you do a, you know, if you do a gig and you have a few drinks, it's not so bad. But if you do a gig sober, that's hard, because you get home and you've got the adrenaline. It's like 3 in the morning, like, okay, put a movie on maybe. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes you don't go to bed till 5, 6 in the morning.
Do you find it hard to switch off then?
Yes and no. It depends what I've done. Certain days, if there's a big event happening or if something big's happened, then yes. But generally, I mean, again, it's like when you first start radio, you get the butterflies, you get the jitters. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, people ask me now if I still get that. And you don't, it's not the same.
No.
You get excited and you still get a kind of...
You get the thrill, don't you?
Yeah,
you
but you've also got a very complacent feeling at the same time where you've done it for so many years.
Yeah,
you know what you're doing. But then you might be put into a different studio and it's like, oh, what's going on? And it's all back to, you know, day one again. So
I can see that.
Yeah,
so I can see that. So unwinding sometimes maybe a little bit harder to do it compared to other times. Do you have a little drink or whatever?
I'd never drink at home, really. A lot of people laugh at me because when I go out, I drink a lot. I'll make up for it when I go out. Don't worry about that. But that's what's quite funny, because sometimes I see people only when I'm out, and they're like, "God, every time I see you, you're drunk." I'm like, "Yeah, but I just never drink at home. It's just never. I'm not one of these people that will sit there with a beer or some wine and watch the telly. It just doesn't. Never has done anything for me. I only really drink when I'm out. I'm like a social drinker, I guess.
That's
if I didn't go out, I probably wouldn't drink.
Jeremy, what about you unwinding? What's the kind of, how do you switch off? Can you switch off?
Yeah, you have to, I think. That's the hotel business taught me that. Because it's open 24 hours, you've got to find a way to switch off.
Sure.
These days, the kids are very good at keeping you straight, if you like.
Grounded.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. They demand your attention when you get home, which is good. I love tennis. I love playing tennis.
Okay.
And so that's where I get my sort of get the adrenaline out, and
it's good to focus on something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how is, because we occasionally mention, you know, wives and girlfriends and partners and stuff on Bloke Talk. You're married to Jane, who you met at university.
That's right.
It's a lovely little romantic story.
Yes, again, another cliche, I suppose.
Is it? Well, I don't know. And how long have you been married for? 20 years?
20 years this October.
Yeah. God, what's that like? Can you give me some tips? I've just celebrated my...
It's great.
Hang on, fifth.
Fifth, oh, you've got a long way to go.
Have I?
Long way to go.
Does it get any better?
It gets better.
All right. And then James well and everything?
Very well,
good.
Yes,
all absolutely. Right, and Scott, what about you? I mean, I'm opening a hornet's nest here, because I've never really spoken to you. I know nothing about your love life. Are you a single man about town?
Had some bad experiences.
Do we need a bloke talk? A bloke talk appeal going out here, maybe? Are you looking for a partner?
Well, this is the weird thing, you see, because, you know, it gets to the summertime, and I always think, oh, I need a girlfriend. I should start settling down and get a girlfriend. And then the summer comes out, and you go out, and you see all the girls out, and you think, no, I don't need it. I can be single. I can be single for a couple more years. It's fine. But yeah, I'm 30 this year, so I am kind of getting that notion of, right, I do need to be thinking about settling down sometime soon. But at the same time, it's a hard job to settle down in. Do you know what I mean? If you're doing music, radio, and that kind of stuff, it's just a very weird job and a very different job. And like I say, you know, you do very few hours. You're at home a lot.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you may have to gig late at night, and so it can clash. It's a funny.
I'm gonna nail down. Do you want a girlfriend or not? Because we can use this radio show to help you.
See, this is the unanswered question, though, because I'm not quite sure. Because when I think I do, I don't. I do, I don't.
Okay. His name is Scott Hughes. If you email me, it's duncan@citytalk.fm. If you like the sound of him, then I'll filter them through if I think he's suitable. Great. I just wanted, before we move on to the Bloke Talk questionnaire, you were telling us a story off air, Scott, about one of your first shows here at the City Radio Tower, which is a great story. Choose your words carefully.
Yeah.
Jonathan, the producer's here. He can always kind of like, well, you know, we'll
I'll find a way. Because I found it wasn't until you told me the story that I thought, my God, I'm so glad I haven't said that on air, like 3 months in on City Talk. Tell us about it.
Yeah, there's a word down south that means something very different to what it means in the north.
Yeah.
And I've always grown up and known that word to mean food.
Yes.
And whenever we talk about that word, we're going for something to eat.
Well, let's talk about that word. We can say that
can we
word.
Say the word? Okay.
It's nosh.
Yeah, nosh.
It's
sure.
nosh.
So
and
I say...
know nosh. It's all right. I know nosh. The producer looks over. Nosh is a term. It's scoff. Yeah. It's food. It's grub. Yeah. Not here, though.
So, well, when I started here, I was on in the afternoon. It was like 1:30, and I just said, I've just popped to Subway to get a nice bit of nosh.
Yeah.
Meaning I've been to the Subway shop to get a nice bit of food.
Yeah.
That was what I meant. And the boss at the time came running in very white-faced and told me it meant something very different up
here. Yeah.
So then he explained its meaning, and it appears it doesn't mean food up here.
I'm so glad that I've learned this, because it was only a matter of time before I was on the radio going, right, midday, nosh time, off we go. And that would have tarnished my image as the grumpy, opinionated man of radio and left me with something totally different. Right, that's good. Thank you. And before we move on, any stories from the world of hoteling and restaurateurs you want to disclose at all? You can change the names if you want. It must be fascinating when you were doing hotels. I mean, you know, I stayed in hotels and I do some people watching and I think that woman has got to be a hooker. Is that just me? Does anyone else do that? It is just me. Great.
Yeah, it's just you.
But you must have some stories to tell. Or is it just kind of like, you know, you just think, oh, well, you know, all makes the world go round.
Yeah, I think people will always surprise you. Yeah. And there's loads of things that go on.
Right.
I couldn't possibly divulge.
No, all fine. Let's move on with the bloke talk questionnaire. This is a standard 7. I've changed this for future weeks because, you know, so you got to kind of evolve and freshen things up. I won't bore you with what the old questions used to be. But 7 questions here. You've both got the same questions. And they're just put together, really, so people can get more of an insight about what you fellas are like. So we'll kick off with Scott. Question number 1 is, what was the last film you watched?
It was Wedding Days, which was dreadful.
Who's in that?
It's the guy from American Pie. Jason Biggs, is it?
All right.
Yeah, him and Isla Fisher used to be in Home and Away.
Yeah.
Saw it on Skybox Office the other night. Watched it because it was the shortest of the two.
Right.
I didn't want to watch a long movie, and it was rubbish.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
What about you, Jeremy?
I missed it at the cinema. I saw, again on Box Office, Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Oh, yeah.
Simon Pegg, which was absolutely brilliant. I used to do, until recently, I used to do quite a lot of running.
Right.
I just thought it was just hilarious.
Have you seen Hot Fuzz?
Yes, I
is
have.
Is it better than Hot Fuzz?
Yeah, I think
it
so.
It is. All right,
definitely.
Must see that.
Definitely.
All right, question number 2. How would you describe yourself politically? Jeremy, we'll kick off with you.
Ooh.
Well, you don't have to say...
Disillusion.
Disillusion. I think you joined the rest of the United Kingdom. That's a very good answer. Disillusion. What about you, Scott?
Ever-changing is probably my best answer to that.
Yeah,
I've kind of... From what my family were when I was younger, I would say I'm quite different now.
So is it fair to say Essex, true blue Essex? Is that what
My family are very conservative.
Yeah.
But as I've got older, I mean, I'm not a huge Labour fan either. I think at the moment it's just a very difficult decision.
Disillusion.
They're very...
I think you represent both of you, the majority of the people in this country.
I think the problem is there's just so little difference between them now.
It's the most conservative Labour ever, isn't it, basically?
And it's just not like it used to be.
No. All right, question 3. What's your favourite time of the day and why? Scott?
I'd say evening time. I think I'm very much an evening person.
Yeah.
I don't like getting up. I don't like going to bed. I always feel like I'm missing out. Even at 2-3 in the morning, I always think there might be something on telly that I'm missing.
Yeah.
And everyone's in bed blatantly, but I always feel like I'm missing out. So I'd say evening time.
Okay, what about you, Jeremy?
Bizarrely, early morning.
Really? How early?
Well, I guess as I get up at 6:30,
it's nothing
better than to be. Well, I'm always the first person down, and I can look down at my garden, and it always looks different every morning. And I just feel like if you can get up, and I like getting up in the morning and doing a bit of work, I feel like you're ahead of the game and so on.
Yeah, you get a lot done, don't you? As well,
you do. You get so much done, and maybe I thought. The evening when I was 30, I can't remember now.
Because I find when I do during the week here, I mean, I get out of bed quite early and I get in the office here for 7. And so, like, that kind of, I like that almost, I'm just at 6:20 to 6:45, where the world's just starting to wake up, but actually you've got some time, you can get things done, and actually there's no one else around, which is great.
It's a very different atmosphere.
Probably says more about me than anything else. Yeah. Right, okay, question number 4. What could you not live without? Jeremy?
Very boringly, probably my family, actually.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very good answer. because some people, I'm waiting for someone to actually say mobile phone on this, to which I will push them. Scott, what about you? What could you not live without?
I think it would be food.
Food?
Yeah. I just love food.
Well, there's a question a little bit later on here, but what is your favourite food? Is there one thing that...
Probably Chinese or pizza.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Either or. I love them both. And
I like just a thumbs up from Jeremy as well. Question five, what would you like written on your gravestone? Now, we were talking about this earlier when we were in the break, and it all got a bit morbid, didn't it, really? So what would you like written on your gravestone, Jeremy? Is there something like epitaph you'd like?
I can't think of anything specific, but it would have to be something funny.
Yeah.
Because I think death has to be treated lightly, if you like. Yeah. Not lightly, but you know what I mean. In a light-hearted way.
Well, I think people either fear it, don't they, or they kind of embrace it and say, "Well, come on, let's just take it as it comes."
I think you've got to embrace it.
Right. What about you, Scott? Any thoughts about what you'd like written on your gravestone?
Definitely something funny. We were talking about Spike Milligan, wasn't it? That had it. He put, "See, I told you I was ill."
Yeah.
Just something like that. Just something that. And then in my mind, every time someone comes to visit me, they'd see it and they'd laugh, and that's the kind of reaction I'd want, I think.
Well, I was kind of hoping I've got plenty of time to think.
Oh, I think let's all hope we've got plenty of time left. Question six, where is the best place in the world? And you know, this could be, it could be, Jeremy, inspired by what you said earlier, just could be your garden at 6:40 in the morning, or it could be elsewhere, but we'll kick off. Yeah, Jeremy, go on.
I think at the moment it's Cape Town. I visited it a couple of years back, and I think it's just a fascinating place, and it's just a beautiful place. But I think it does tend to change. I mean, I tend to have different... I think there's so many places to visit in the world, and you tend to...
If you could sum up Cape Town, I mean, because that's an interesting one in a sentence, what is the essence of it? Why do you think it's just such a special place?
It's a little bit mystical, really, because you have that massive sort of Table Mountain in the background to it, and it just gives that sort of feeling to it.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain, actually.
No, but magical, mystical.
Yeah, I mean, South Africa in itself is an incredible place, I think. But, and it just that mystical quality, I think.
Is it kind of place where you know maybe you'd retire to, or
potentially? Yeah, I mean, as I say, I think it's it is a beautiful country, and having spent a little bit of time there.
Yeah.
Possibly. You know, it's a bit far away.
But. All right, question six, Scotty boy, where is the best place in the world?
I think for me, it would be America. Ironically, I used to spend a lot of time there when I was a kid.
Right.
My dad did airline insurance, had a lot of clients over there, so we spent a lot of time. There's a place called Balboa Island, which is about an hour from LA, and it's a kind of little town. It's a little fishing village, and every house has a jetty with a boat on the end.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's cheap. You can have a boat for, you know, whatever it costs. Yeah. The houses are kind of, you know, $100,000, and it's just, everything was cheap. But a lovely little fishing village, and everyone knew everybody. But America fascinates me. It's so diverse.
Have you been there recently at all?
I went to New York, in December.
Yeah.
But just the difference between New York, LA, Mississippi, you know.
I've done
Texas.
Two places. I've done New York, and I've also got relatives in a place called Daytona Beach in Florida.
Right,
And New York was just so different from, I mean, you know, Daytona Beach was kind of like, it was a little bit like Blackpool.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean that, it was just bizarre. And it was like, it's all right, you know, 3 hours apart by plane, but New York was just so cosmopolitan and so different. And then you go somewhere else, it's slightly, you know, the back of beyond a little bit, where the attitudes and the politics are so different.
This is the problem with the voting over there. It's too big to have one person lead it because... Yeah. You know, you've got New York and LA that always go Democrats. You've got everything in the middle that always goes Republican. And there's the Bible Belt. And it's so diverse.
And then you've got the Deep South where they're all mad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, you're right. All right. And the final question, question seven. What is your favourite meal? Starter, main and pudding. Scott, we'll start with you on this because you like it. Well, you all like our food. So off you go.
Well, it's a bit of a weird meal to put together, but I would say I love crispy aromatic duck.
Yes.
So I would go for that as a starter.
Crispy, with the old duck kind of pancakes, like spring onion, the cucumber, and the old sauce.
Can't go wrong on a night out to have that at the end of the night. Yeah. Perfect.
You have that at the end of the night.
Yeah,
when you
have your Chinese banquet at 3 a.m. Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong.
Such a rock and roll lifestyle, you believe. All right, so that's your starter. What about your main?
Main would be either a pepperoni pizza or a steak and chips.
Okay.
And I like my steak fairly rare, so medium rare, something like that.
Yeah, take its horns off, wipe its bottom, bring it to the table.
That's it, you got it. And pudding's a weird one. I quite like things like spotted dick and custard and kind of a caramelly, you know, a thick, spongy, caramelly custardy.
There, maybe.
Anything that's going to finish me off quite early in the heart department, I mean.
Well, why not? That is a great selection. Jeremy, what about you?
It's a tricky one, this one. Yeah. Tricky one, tricky
You're
one.
You're going to quote off the menu.
Yeah, I was thinking of that, but I resist the temptation, although I won't, actually, because I'll do a couple of plugs here.
Go on. Far away.
Starter would be French onion soup.
Right,
with a really nice sort of cheesy crust on the top. I don't actually think we've got on the menu just at the minute, but anyway. And then the main course would be either, I want to go for two as well, a tuna steak.
Oh, yeah.
Sashimi tuna steak, seared, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Cooked, just cooked, which we do have on the menu in, in the Black House.
I think.
And or a fiorentina pizza with the a fresh soft egg on the top, which we do have in the gusto menu.
Okay.
So I'm lucky. I can have my favourite meals every time I go to one of my restaurants.
And dessert, pudding.
I wouldn't have one. I'd have an espresso.
Well, that's a good answer. That's a healthy answer as well. Almost,
sort of.
That's why he's slim and we're not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's your answer.
All right, listen, gents, it's been great. Thank you so much for joining us on Bloke Talk this weekend. Scott Hughes has been here from, I like to call it the Pop Music Channel from the City Radio Tower. You do Drive Time, it's
drive
called,
time,
isn't
yeah.
it? And Jeremy Roberts, who last Thursday opened his latest Gusto. In a couple of sentences, Jeremy, the essence of Gusto, how is it different from elsewhere?
It's a great place to spend time.
Yes.
You can have all your favourites there, your pastas and your pizzas, but something a little bit special as well if you want it.
And it's located on the Albert Dock?
On the Albert Dock, that's right.
Brilliant. Gents, thanks very much for joining us
this
weekend. And good luck with the restaurant, Jeremy. Good luck, Scott, with the fine broadcasting career you've carved out over many years. We're back next weekend with Bloke Talk here at City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Whatever you're doing, have a great weekend.